I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Ellie Moffitt. Ellie is a portfolio manager and principal at Ball & Gaynor Investment Counsel. And Ellie, I know that Ball & Gaynor has grown over its 24 years in business and now has over $10 billion in investments under management. Why do you think your approach to investing has attracted so much in the way of assets?
We have what I would consider an evergreen approach, an approach that works very well in good times and bad. We buy high-quality companies that consistently grow their dividend, and it's a wonderful way for an individual to protect themselves in down times and in good times.
Can you give me a couple of examples of just the types of stocks that you would buy that you would have in a typical portfolio?
This past year, for example, a name like Disney has done very well. Disney has the characteristics we look for. It has better than average sales, better than average earnings, and it has a growing dividend. Today, for example, they increased their dividend 15%. That's a pretty nice sign that things are working well within the company. They have lower than average debt, and they've set themselves up in several businesses that really have nice trajectories. We like to look strategically at what a company is about, and they have good shareholder ownership. They've got very interesting format. They have ideas that they can sell multiple times. They bought the old Marvel comic book company, and they can introduce those characters through their movies. If a character is really hot, they can have it continue through a TV show on their cable channel. They can sell you toys at a toy store. So there's a lot of ways for them to monetize their creative ideas over long periods of time. And then they have a stable of great ideas and room to experiment a little at the edges. This is a stock that's worked very well.
Ellie, how do you feel overall about the outlook for the stock market?
I think for the long run, we're quite optimistic. With interest rates this low, you know, our options are cash that pays nothing, interest rates that are paying a high 2% rate. I have to think over the long run, inflation is going to make either of those choices not very attractive. So while the stock market, the price of admission is volatility, I think it's going to be well worth people's patience to wait, and they'll be rewarded.
And particularly, I would think, if it's a long-term need, in other words, not for 2 months from now, because nobody knows what the market's going to do 2 months from now. But over the long term, the chances are it's going to go up.
That's exactly right.
What do you say to people in terms of the emotional aspect of investing?
Well, it's sort of an interesting time. You point out there are more mutual funds than there are stocks on the New York Stock Exchange. So more and more indexes and ETFs get introduced. But the average investor in mutual funds usually comes out behind because they have a tendency to chase. They're chasing the last quarter's hot stock or hot idea.
And that's where, in my mind, working with a professional, someone who can help you take the emotion out of the conversation when you design your financial planning and investment strategy, just makes all kind of sense. You don't want to make a mistake.
Well, we think it's very good advice. A lot of people watch football and they know it well, but would they be able to step up against the NFL? It would be a single coach, and you'd look to the other side and you'd see the whole coaching staff, and then, whoa, there's another dozen people up in the box. You gain a lot of advantage if you work with a good financial team.
Absolutely. And Ellie, if folks listening would like to learn more about you and Ball & Gaynor, what is your contact information?
They would call us at 287-6100.
And that's a 513 area code. For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Ellie Moffitt. Ellie is a portfolio manager and a principal at Ball & Gaynor Investment Counsel. And Ellie, we're almost at the end of the year. There's a lot of people out there thinking about what they need to do in these final days of 2013 to really maximize their investment positions. Should they be selling any stocks? Should they be investing in certain kind of mutual funds? From an investment standpoint, is there anything that people need to think about or know as we head into the final days of 2013?
Sure. It's always a good exercise to rebalance your portfolio. Take a look at what your original goals were, which you hopefully worked out with a financial advisor, and thought about what your long-term objectives are. If you have losses in mutual funds or stocks, it would be a wise time to try to harvest some of those losses and pair them against many of the gains you've taken. It's a year when the stock market's, you know, had tremendous gains, so it's probably a good year to look closely for that.
Well, and you might want to look at what you have already realized in gains and try to get an idea of what your tax picture is going to be to determine how much sense it makes to take those losses.
Exactly.
You know, Ellie, it's interesting. We get loads of magazines, both at our office and at our home. Money-related magazines, go figure, right? And it's fascinating to me as I look at the headlines, as I look at the covers of these magazines, that they really structure to invoke some kind of emotion in people so that they'll take action. Not necessarily good action either, in my view.
Well, that's a very good insight. You know, magazine covers are designed to sell magazines, and they are appealing to that emotion. But people have to keep in mind when they invest that the market is a herd, and it's really driven by fear or greed. And if they get caught in the emotion of the day, they may end up with hoof marks on their body.
Don't a lot of studies show that individual investors tend to make, on average, less than the market because they time themselves incorrectly and they're in and out at the wrong times?
It's an excellent observation, because your mutual fund returns in general are pretty good, but the average investor comes nowhere near close to what the average should be because of timing. They're chasing last quarter's returns, or they're chasing the hot stock or hot idea, and typically arriving right at the peak, right when it's on the front cover of magazines and the train has come and gone.
When stocks are lower and it makes sense, then that would be the time to buy, not when they're at the highest, correct?
Well, yeah, everyone loves a value. When they go shopping, they're always on the sale rack. When they see snow shovels on sale in July, they may pick one up. They should treat stocks the same way and be a little more aware of valuations and timing.
When you work with your own personal clients, your investors, you help them devise a plan that helps takes the emotion out of the conversation. How do you do that? How do you advise?
One benefit we have now is we've been through some very tough times over the last decade. So I think people have a better understanding of what an appropriate allocation is for them or how much volatility they can stand. But our style of investing, high quality dividend growth investing, comes with some built-in benefits, because our stocks typically have a dividend component. And in today's environment, if you're expecting real returns to be about 7%, if your dividend's 3%, that's sort of the bird in hand. So it would be reasonable to expect about 4% growth. But the stock market understands the math behind this. And so when the market is fluctuating wildly, it sees that 3%, and these stocks are handled much more gently when the market turns against us.
You know, folks listening would like to reach out to you, learn more about Ball and Gainer. What is your telephone number or website?
513-287-6100.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Tom, the holidays are upon us, and it's really a time to think about how you can impact and help others by sharing your talents, your resources, your skills. You know, that old saying, the more you give, the more you gain, is certainly true, I think, when it comes to businesses and the business folks within organizations becoming involved in the community.
Well, I think that's right. And lots of businesses do that, in many cases without being noticed. But many businesses encourage their employees to participate in not-for-profit activities, either individually or as a team.
Reaching out to help your community as a business can also create benefits that actually enhance your own business's bottom line and grow your profits.
In many cases, it's a good way for younger people to get experience in leadership, because, you know, if they have the energy and the drive to do so, they may attain leadership status in a not-for-profit organization faster than they do at their employer.
You know, in this day and age, I think a lot of young people want that ability to go into the community and make an impact, really have action that affects others, not just a gathering for networking. They want to do something that's meaningful. And organizations who recognize that and allow those employees to really take that kind of action and initiative, those are the ones that are going to win.
Yeah, and I think many companies are very purposeful with their charitable dollars so that they encourage their employees to be involved in organizations, and they help financially subsidize those activities by directing their charitable contributions towards the organizations that their employees are involved with.
If you can align the type of organization that you're passionate about, and certainly one that also can showcase your own skills. So for example, if you're an attorney, maybe you get involved in providing legal advice for a nonprofit. Or in our case, if you're CPAs, we created something called Accounting for Kids. So again, if you can think about how you strategically align your community involvement so that you can enhance and showcase your own skills, it's a very much of a win-win for everybody involved.
And I think if you're in a service business like us, then you tend to serve. And whether you're serving your paying client or a not-for-profit activity, it's sort of the same talents that you're using.
And businesses and business owners and people who are engaged daily in a business activity are often very used to solving problems. That's what we do. If you take that same kind of skill set and use that in your community involvement to help solve a problem, then it's powerful and you can really impact so many lives. And I really think bottom line is that those organizations that take the initiative, they make it easy for their employees to get involved. Many people and many organizations allow their associates to volunteer during the day. Those are the companies that can create a competitive advantage for their business. During this holiday season, if you can encourage your employees, encourage your associates, get out into the community, figure out how you can help others while allowing your own business to shine, please do so. There's a lot of people and organizations that need your help. For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Crystal, our topic today has to do with charitable giving and what happens when you're a business. And in our case, we had a question recently for our Inquirer column about a not-for-profit or about a business that was contributing to a not-for-profit, and they want to know how they get a tax benefit for that.
Yes, in this particular case, it was a single-member LLC, which for tax purposes, in this case, was treated as a sole proprietorship. So what that means is that the individual's business activity, their profits, are reported on their own personal income tax return on Schedule C.
So when you do that, if you make your charitable contribution, you don't really deduct that contribution on the Schedule C. It's an itemized deduction, just like any other charitable contribution that you would make individually.
And you can only take the deduction if you itemize your deductions, which you report that on Schedule A. And again, there's limitations. You have to meet certain thresholds before you can be able to take the deduction. And certainly, whether it's cash or a non-cash item, there's lots of rules and compliance. But if you can sort through all that, it can really result in a nice tax savings while you're helping some other organization.
Yeah, I think there's a misunderstanding by some people that when a business makes a charitable contribution that they come out even. In other words, they get a tax deduction, so it doesn't really cost them anything. But of course, it costs them. If you make a $1,000 charitable contribution and you're in the 25% tax bracket, it saves you $250 in tax, but it costs you $1,000. So net, you're out of pocket $750.
So you really have to have a charitable motive before it makes sense to make a charitable contribution. You just don't do it to drive your tax income down.
And when you have to be careful when you are making charitable contributions that you document what you're doing. And if you make more than $250, you need to have a written receipt from the charity acknowledging your contribution.
The IRS has become a little more assertive about really making sure that that documentation requirement is met. So you can't just throw cash in the basket at church anymore. You really do have to have some kind of a proof to take the deduction.
Well, and then there's different levels depending on what type of contribution you're making. If you're making something other than a cash contribution, then you have a higher level of detail that you have to give. And if it's more than $5,000 in value, you actually have to have an appraisal that's signed and part of your tax return.
By a qualified appraiser. You know, one thing I love to do is go to all the church auctions and the different types of nonprofit events where you can actually bid on items. And certainly when you make that contribution to buy the item, a portion of it's deductible, but you have to reduce the contribution deduction by the value you received. So for example, if I made a contribution for yoga lessons, then I have to actually reduce my contribution amount, the amount that I get to claim, by the value of the service.
So that you would only get a contribution deduction if you paid $110 for $100 worth of lessons. You could deduct the $10.
Exactly. You have to reduce the contribution deduction by the value of the service that you're receiving in that situation.
You know, a better way to make contributions for most people, if they own stock, is to contribute appreciated stock to the charity rather than cash. Because if they've held the stock for at least a year and they contribute it, they can deduct the fair market value, but they avoid paying tax on that appreciation.
It's really important to understand the rules related to charitable contributions for Business Wise. I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Ohio Senate President Keith Faber. And, you know, the issue that I have with jobs and what's going on in our state in terms of incentives. I think it's wonderful that we have so many great new programs that are helping jobs come to Ohio. And certainly we have created many jobs in Ohio, haven't we, in the last 3 years or so?
You know, Ohio's open for business. We're seeing a dramatic growth in jobs in the state. 3 years ago, we were losing 100,000 jobs each and every year. And in the previous decade, we lost 600,000 jobs in Ohio. The newest estimates in the last roughly 3 years, 150,000 private sector jobs have been created. That's going in the right direction. Now, I'm not telling you it's good enough. It's not. We always want to do more. We want every Ohioan to have a job and a job that they choose.
But the unemployment rate is still lower than the national average, but it's still fairly high.
It is. It's way too high. You know, we went from Ohio having an unemployment rate that was a full point plus over the national average to actually being at or below the national average. We're seeing things in Ohio that are going in the right direction. And part of that is because of the transformation that we did both in our tax code, the transformation we did in our regulatory environment by reducing regulations and making it more streamlined. But also part of it can be to Governor Kasich's program, Jobs Ohio, where we took our Department of Development, which moved like any other state agency at slow, glacial pace, and now moves at the speed of business with our new nonprofit, Jobs Ohio. We're seeing response times that are getting the job done for jobs in Ohio.
It feels like here in Southwest Ohio that much of those dollars for incentives are going to other parts of the state. How can we get more of those dollars down here to really help grow jobs in this area?
Well, I'm not a real big fan of incentive dollars to create jobs. I think the best thing you can do to incent business is to create a positive business environment overall. Special giveaways tend to run the risk of picking winners and losers, and government never picks winners and losers very well. But having said that, one of the benefits of going to the Jobs Ohio model is using the state liquor profits, and that way gives them the flexibility to work on those projects that are going to have the best return on investment. And they're starting to do that more aggressively. With some litigation that ended, Jobs Ohio is now starting to hit its stride and picking up the pace. Along with the other changes we've made, hopefully this will benefit all of Ohio.
We still have a lot of unfilled jobs. How are you dealing with that in terms of workforce development?
We need to do a better job, not just in Ohio, but nationally, of pairing individuals that want to work with the jobs that are available. And part of that is making sure people have the skills that are necessary to fill those jobs. There are roughly 100,000 jobs available today on the Ohio Means Jobs website. So if you're an employer out there looking for an employee, go out to the Ohio Means Jobs website and post your position. If you're an employee wanting a job, go out and look on Ohio Means Jobs. There just may be that job you need on that site today.
You know, we regularly have economists on this show, and they tell us when they talk about unemployment rates that there's a real difference between people with education. You know, people 25 and older with a college degree tend to have a pretty high employment rate versus people under 25 or people without a college degree?
Well, there's certainly a difference based on the training and ability. And it used to be for a long time, everybody thought you had to go to college to be successful. The governor says all the time that his plumber makes more than his lawyer. The reality is that you don't necessarily need that four-year degree to be successful anymore. Our trade schools are putting people out that are making $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a year. And so there are alternative ways to be successful, and people need to find that fit that's good for them.
And, Senator, if folks want to reach out to you, they can reach you at your email at Faber, F-A-B-E-R, at ohiosenate.gov, or you have the weekly updates.
Yes, we put out weekly video snippet updates at ohiosenategop.org.
Thank you for being our guest, and thank you for listening to BusinessWise. I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner, and Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Ohio Senate President Keith Faber. And one thing that you are very passionate about and you were very instrumental in making happen is the Common Sense Initiative in terms of regulatory reform in the state of Ohio, which was a much needed, very much welcomed process. Maybe you can share what's going on there, why people should care, and then how it can help businesses grow in Ohio.
Well, one of the things I've often said is that for any state to be successful and to create and grow jobs, you have to have a regulatory environment that means business. And that doesn't mean you're not going to have clean air, clean water, or healthy, safe work environments. We all want that. We're all going to make sure we have that. But to get compliance, you don't need a one-size-fits-all model. And that's what Ohio had. We worked for about 10 years trying to come up with a Common Sense Initiative. We went around the state and had regulatory reform hearings. And the horror stories that we had literally filled volumes. And so what we said in Ohio is we can and we should do better. And so with Governor Kasich's help, we came up with the Common Sense Initiative that does a few very simple common sense things that frankly should have been done all along. One of them, it does a cost-benefit analysis on the rule's impact on small businesses. And does the rule cost more than the benefits? If it does, you shouldn't do it. The second thing we did was allowed for regulatory flexibility and compliance. We all want compliance. How you get there should be different and should be able to vary based on the size, scope, and the risks associated with the thing you're trying to regulate. And then the third, the one that just always astonished me that it wasn't done in government before, was to have customer service standards. Our bureaucrats and regulators need to understand who their customers are, and that's the taxpayers. They're the consumers of government services. And so you had to have a system that was more friendly and accessible to the consumer. In this case, for example, we did Rule Watch that allows Ohioans to be aware and informed of what rules are coming up for revision and what issues are being considered on each one of the rules. The biggest difference is that we've seen regulatory filings in the state of Ohio, you know, that 7-foot-tall Ohio Administrative Code that impacts every single Ohioan's lives. It's been reduced on new filings by 46%.
It is fascinating to me how it does feel like the demeanor of the department heads at the various state agencies really have and are trying to become much more customer friendly. You're right, it might not be there yet, but you can actually see a movement towards that.
It's about compliance and trying to get everyone to yes, not trying to be gotcha and, oh my goodness, you didn't fill out the paperwork just right. Let's try and figure out what you needed to do to get the job done. And, you know, I've always said, here's a good example. If you're a small business and you want to make widgets, can you call one place to find out what rules and regulations are necessary for you to comply with when you build your new widget factory? Isn't it better to have you go to one place than have to go to 15 different places only to be halfway through your construction and somebody come to say, oh no, you didn't build this section of the widget factory correctly and we're going to have to not allow you to open.
And you mentioned Rule Watch a moment ago. If someone does want to sign up for that, they can go to the website, the Ohio website at Common Sense Initiative, and do that.
Correct. Just go on, I can't give the exact site, but just go to Google and type in Ohio Rule Watch and it'll pop right up.
You can also get there through the Ohio Business Gateway.
And I believe you can probably also get there through the Ohio Senate's website.
Senator Faber, thank you so much for being our guest. And if folks would like to get in touch with you, your email, you have a weekly update. Maybe you can share that information.
Sure. You can reach me at email at the Ohio Senate. It's Faber, my last name, F as in Frank, A, B as in boy, E-R, at ohiosenate.gov. And you can sign up for our weekly updates at the ohiosenategop.org and then /signup.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Molly Lohr. Molly is the executive director of Resource, which is a Cincinnati nonprofit organization that takes corporate donations of office furniture and supplies and then redistributes them to nonprofit. Let's talk about what the genesis of this organization is and who are some of beneficiaries.
We're in our 27th year, and it's an exciting place to be. Cincinnati is a very generous community. Corporations have allowed us to save nonprofits over $44 million through their contributions over the years.
It's wonderful that as a nonprofit, you don't have to take your very limited dollars and spend them on furniture. You can actually use the funds and the contributions and the grants for your purpose. So what you're doing effectively, in my mind, is really allowing nonprofits to more efficiently and effectively use their limited dollars.
That's very true. Talbert House came in this morning, and they needed to refurnish a new facility for themselves, and they were looking for things that would fit for their director, and they were able to find a great desk, a whole office for the new director, thanks to Fifth Third Bank.
Not only does the not-for-profit benefit, but you're also kind of green. I mean, you're recycling this furniture that otherwise might end up in a landfill.
That's very true. We keep hundreds of tons of product out of the landfills every year.
What are other examples? Does it have to be a big corporation like that to donate?
Not at all. Other small companies donate whenever they have something. It could be 3 chairs, as long as they're in good, usable condition. Our inventory changes daily because of the donations coming in. It can be a truckload. It can be one piece. It can be a ladder. We get lots of nice product from Home Depot.
Do they actually use it within their own organization, or do they allow others, maybe beneficiaries of that organization, like people who they then turn around and contribute it to?
Yes, a good example of that is this week we received some great stuffed animals, 17-inch dogs and cats from PetSmart. And a group called the Pregnancy Center came in and took those for Christmas gifts for the people in their programs.
That's wonderful.
I can certainly see how the not-for-profits benefit by getting the furniture. How do the companies that make the donations, how do they benefit from this?
Oftentimes, the furniture has already been depreciated, and there's a glut in the market. Going to the trouble of trying to sell your furniture could take a long time. Many people want to reach out and do something good for the community, so we send our trucks and our employees to pick up the product at no cost to the donor and bring them to our facility, which is located in Sharonville.
It's just one example of how something as simple as sharing things that you don't need anymore with others who really do need.
I think that's very true. It's like when I see someone and hear of someone donating to public radio, I'm more likely to support that company.
Non-for-profit organizations, how do they get connected with Resource? Do you reach out to them? Do they need to find you?
We do our best to reach out to them. We have a very small staff of 5 people and tons of great volunteers. So we're constantly emailing and mailing to organizations that we know of to make them aware of what we do and our services. But they have to be a 501c3 charitable tax exempt in order to be a member. You can go online at resourceweb.org, click on membership, find the application, and you can also come and tour our facility before you join just to see if what we have is going to benefit your operation. Nonprofits can come in Monday through Friday from 8:30 to 4:30 and see what we have.
If folks listening would want to reach you, again, what's your website or your contact information?
It's resourceweb.org, or our telephone number is 513-554-4944.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Molly Lohr. Molly is the executive director of Resource, which is a Cincinnati nonprofit organization that takes corporate donations, such as office furniture and supplies. And then, Molly, you distribute them out to other member nonprofits. And maybe you can talk about how people listening, companies listening today, can help nonprofits.
If they have anything that they're no longer using that's in good condition, they can call Resource at 513-554-4944 and just tell us what they have. And we can let you know whether or not a nonprofit could use that. We have a good example. University Hospital is updating their Nautilus equipment, and they called to ask if that would be something nonprofits can use. And we're so excited because we'll be able to pick that up and then redistribute it to a local nonprofit.
And you mentioned earlier that things like dolls, any other kind of inventory that companies may want to eliminate because maybe it's obsolete.
A good example of that is Beds, Bath & Beyond. We get product from them. They're new comforters. And for young people who are in programs like at Lighthouse Youth Services that are transitioning out of foster care, they actually now help set them up in apartments for the first time.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And they need everything. So things like bedspreads and blankets from Standard Textile or pillows. Those are always things that are needed in those situations.
So the benefit to the contributor, the company's contributing, whether it be inventory or furniture, it makes it easy for them to dispose of these products because you actually come and pick them up in most cases. And for the company, it saves them the cost of doing that, of disposing.
And it also can help them not have to choose, because lots of companies get calls all the time saying, do you have furniture or do you have products? They can simply say, oh, you can find them at Resource. That's where we make our donations.
You also help them in other ways. Let's talk about some of those educational ways that you do help them, including something called Building Blocks for Nonprofits.
That's a wonderful program, and it's only made possible thanks to our volunteer speakers. We reach out to the corporate community, to consultants, and to foundations, and ask for experts on particular topics. Jackie Ray was just on from Game Day Communications presenting on social media. These volunteers spend 3 hours with us coaching and training people from the nonprofit community on their particular topic. This year, thanks to our presenters, over 369 nonprofit representatives benefited.
Do you open this up to people who are not members?
Anyone from the community can attend our seminars. They're open to the public. Once again, we're focusing on nonprofits and what their needs are. So that will be the gist of the program.
So maybe even board members who are participating on nonprofit boards might want to participate.
Definitely any volunteers, volunteer staff, the executive directors, they're meant for anyone in the nonprofit community.
Is there a listing of those types of educational seminars on your website?
Yes. You can find those at resourceweb.org.
And that's also where you can go if you are a not-for-profit and you're not registered as a member. You can go to your website and get an application.
Yes, you can. You can download them under the membership file.
Earlier this year, you unveiled a brand new program called Event Decor Rentals by Resource. What's that all about?
So if you need a centerpiece for your event, you send the person who's in charge of your decor and you can find a lovely vase or mirrors or votives, that type of thing. So you don't need to go out and purchase it. You can rent it for pennies on the dollar at Resource and then just return it a week later, and it doesn't take up space for you and it benefits someone else in the community.
So again, this is not just for nonprofits though, correct?
All of our programs are
for nonprofits. And if folks listening want to learn more about that program as well as others, again, your website one more time is?
resourceweb.org.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guests today are Dave Van Horn and Darcy Voorhees. And Darcy is the CEO of Flaming Medusa Studios. And Darcy, I've taken a look at your work. It's absolutely amazing to me, being a CPA who cannot draw stick people. I'm always fascinated by folks who are so creative. Where did you come up with this idea of telling stories about businesses in an animated style?
Well, I always like to tell stories, and especially since I started my own business, the idea of how businesses come around and what kind of journey they go through has become a lot more interesting to me. So that's really what started it out. And especially once we found out that there was a new board on Fountain Square, that really gave us an opportunity to actually show something interesting on it.
Well, tell us about what's being shown on there right now that you developed, the Queen City Chronicles.
Well, really, we were thinking about Cincinnati and how so much stuff has happened here, and we just thought it would be a great way to get some stories out that people probably haven't heard about before. And the first one we did was the Greater Story, and after doing some research on them, I found out, and I didn't know this before, but actually Regina Greater was the wife of the man who founded Greater's, but she was the one that really made it big.
Mm-hmm.
Her husband was happy with having a shop. So I thought that that was really great, and it was inspiring for me, too.
And she did that after he passed away. I guess he was actually killed because of a streetcar accident.
He was happy with just having his one little store in East McMillan. This tragedy happened in the early 1900s. Women couldn't vote. She was a widow. She had two little kids, and she could have gone either way, either, you know, close it up and just concentrate on her family. But she decided, well, you know, let's see if we can create something out of this. And we are enjoying the fruits of her labor today.
I was going to say, thank goodness she did that.
Yeah.
I love Greater's, I think,
I
as we all do, don't
exactly,
we?
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
And so right now, if people go down to Fountain Square on the big video board that I'm sure most people are familiar with, that periodically plays on the video board.
Right now, it plays 12 times a day. So it plays every 2 hours. Down there. The board has sound, so you can hear the story. You can see it. It's very unique because everything else that's on the board is live action, and then ours is the only animated piece on there. So it really grabs your attention and allows people something different to see down on the square.
And David, you and Darcy are married, and I think it's just the perfect combination. David is actually a CPA, the analytical business side.
Yes.
Darcy is the creative side. What a wonderful marriage, right?
Yeah
definitely.
It's fabulous.
Yeah.
And you work together. How do you see, David, from a business standpoint? How do you see companies using this animation to tell their stories?
It's a great opportunity, and we found in talking with our clients and future clients, when they see the Greater's video, they get that connection, almost a personal connection between them and the company. Like Greater's, they actually see the tragedy and the hard work that it took to create Greater's as it is, and so our videos allow companies to bridge that connection, which everybody wants. They want to have that personal relationship with their customer, and our videos allow people to do that.
And after watching the video, you feel like you know the family, even though you've never met them.
Mm-hmm.
You may never met them.
Well,
but
you see
know
Regina
them.
In a little cartoon.
And actually, the fact that we're using illustration to show it is a lot cheaper than trying to recreate historical costume and recreate. I mean, the building that they actually lived in was just torn down, so you can't even go there anymore.
Well, you know, it's called the Queen City Chronicle series, so I assume there's going to be more of these coming out?
Yes, there are. We have several lined up. The next one we're working on is about Lunkin Airport.
And if folks would like to learn more about your company, Flaming Medusa, how can they reach you?
Well, we have a website. It's flamingmedusa.com.
Thank you for listening to BusinessWise. I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is David Van Horn and Darcy Voorhees. David and Darcy are owners of a company called Flaming Medusa, which is a very interesting, unique company that tells stories and helps businesses in all kinds of ways, but using animation. And Darcy, I know you're the creative one, and you're a storyteller, Darcy. Let's talk about that and why that brings some unique value to your clients.
Well, animation is a very flexible medium. Because you're using drawings and sound, you're actually appealing to more senses of the viewer than if you, you know, if you just had like a live action person explaining something. So I find that it's very helpful when companies need to maybe demonstrate something that you can't otherwise see. For instance, a company that goes in and removes moisture from a basement, you can't see that, but we can draw that so that you can understand it.
Well, you see a lot of animation in professional education.
Yes.
It helps break up the topic, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And it does lend itself more to retention. You can pay attention more when you're not saying or staring at just a talking head saying the same stuff. If you add some graphics and some unique colors or any kind of information that people can absorb through their eyes versus just their ears, it helps retain knowledge a lot better.
You're using more of your senses, and it's just a more whole experience, I think.
Yeah, and video is growing so fast now. I saw a stat a couple of days ago where over 50% of internet content is now video, and over 85% of the people who use the internet are watching videos.
What other challenges do you see, Darcy and Dave, in terms of working with your clients?
I find that it's actually, once you get talking to a company and you discover what their message is that they want to get out, it's very easy to get going. But sometimes, just like you're saying, if you're dealing with people who aren't visual or they don't have experience with arts, they may not understand right away where animation becomes handy for them.
Especially in Cincinnati, we've found a lot of clients when we go in and talk to them and say that we're animation company, they immediately think of the Saturday morning cartoons, and they're like, well, that doesn't fit. Cincinnati is an extremely conservative town, as everybody knows, and they sometimes don't like to think outside the box. They think, well, I want a video, so I want a guy to come with a camera and a boom mic and record what's going on. We can tell it in the exact same way, but in a unique fashion that people will want to sit down and watch and are like, wow, that's really cool.
Exactly,
it's not the
same.
It doesn't get lost in the shuffle because it doesn't look like everything
and
else.
And as business owners, especially smaller business owners, it's critical. They don't have the resources, huge resources, spend multi-million dollars on advertising.
Exactly.
So if they can come up with a unique way to distinguish themselves by telling a story that connects with our customers, with their product or service, I think that's valuable.
And it's great if they want to change something. It's real easy for us to go in and just edit it out. We just, you know, you charge for the time that you're editing. You don't have to go back and try to find the same people that you had, the actors or the voice actor. You can just go in and edit out that one spot.
And if folks want to take a look at your work, they can actually go to your website, which is
www.flamingmedusa.com.
Or go down to Fountain Square because you've got Cincinnati Queen City Chronicles running right now.
Exactly.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.